Good evening. We're going to be in Galatians chapter 2 tonight, if you want to go ahead and turn over there. And as we get ready to go into Galatians 2, let me take a few minutes to kind of set the stage for what Paul is talking about here. And if you remember, shortly after the church was established in Jerusalem, the persecution of the Christians broke out, and so it caused them to scatter all throughout Judea. In Acts 11, we see that the Hellenistic Jews, these Jewish Christians who lived outside of Jerusalem, who lived among the Gentiles, they established the church in Antioch of Syria. And this church was a major church in those days. In fact, it really was only rivaled by the church in Jerusalem. And so soon after that church in Antioch began to grow, the news reached Jerusalem about it, so they sent Barnabas there to preach the word. Now, Barnabas was a very prominent early church leader. If you remember, the first time we saw him or heard of him was in Acts 4 when he sold a field and gave all of the proceeds to the apostles. He was also the person who took a risk by taking Paul to Peter and James in Jerusalem after Paul was converted, because the people in Jerusalem, they still knew Paul as Saul, the persecutor, and so they were afraid of him. But Barnabas stood up for Paul. You'll also remember, so Barnabas, he begins preaching there in Antioch, and soon he realizes that he can't handle this pastoring alone, and so he goes to Tarsus to find Paul, and he brings Paul back. Now, Paul was a good fit because he was a Jew, but he was also a Roman citizen, and so, and even more importantly, obviously in Acts 9, we see that he was the one chosen to proclaim the gospel to the Gentiles. So Paul and Barnabas are teaching here, and for about a year they taught together before they went on their first missionary journey. So the church there in Antioch, they sent them out on this missionary journey, and first they went to the island of Cyprus, and then they went over into what is modern-day Turkey, and they began working their way through these mountains of Asia Minor, and they were establishing churches all along the way. And if you remember, in these towns, as they preached, Paul would always preach first in the synagogue, but often the Jews rejected their message, and so he would turn to the Gentiles in these towns. And so Paul, again, he established churches throughout this region, and that's the part of Asia that we know of as Galatia. So these were cities like Antioch of Pisidia, a different Antioch, Lystra and Derbe. These were some of the towns in Galatia that we know of. So at the end of their first missionary journey, now Paul and Barnabas go back to Antioch, their Antioch of Syria, which was their home church, and they stay there for a while. And then we see in Acts 15, we see that some Judaizers come from Jerusalem, and they start teaching that you had to be circumcised to be saved. And of course, Paul and Barnabas disagreed sharply with this, and so the elders in Antioch appointed them along with some other men to travel back to Jerusalem to go speak with the apostles about this issue. And so now that meeting, that visit, is detailed in Acts chapter 15 by Luke, but I believe that that's the same event that Paul is talking about here in Galatians chapter 2. So apparently these Judaizers that had came to Antioch, they've continued to travel around, and so that included that they traveled over into the churches in the area of Galatia, and so they're literally poisoning these churches with these legalistic beliefs. Not only did they believe that you had to be circumcised to be a Christian, but they believed in honoring the Mosaic law and observance of the Sabbath. And so from this letter of to the Galatians, we see these false believers, as Paul refers to them in chapter 1, that they tried to discredit him as an apostle. And that's what we read about in Galatians chapter 1, as Paul first had to establish his authority, and that it came from God and not from man. You see, some of the Jewish Christians, not all of them, but a lot of them, found it very difficult to accept that Gentiles could be equals in the church, at least not without first coming through the Mosaic law. And so we saw in Acts 15 that some of these Pharisees stood up at that meeting. These were Pharisees who were converted to Christianity. They stood up at that Jerusalem conference and they argued their point about circumcision and adherence to the law. If you remember, Pharisees in the past, these Pharisees that are converts, they had believed that you could be justified before God by keeping the law. So when these Pharisees became Christians, they had to give up on this attempt at justification through the law, and they had to acknowledge that you're saved by the grace of God. So these Judaizers were teaching two things as they traveled to all of these churches. First, they were telling them that the Gentiles must be initiated into Judaism through circumcision. And then secondly, the Gentile Christians must live under the law of Moses if they wanted to be upright with God. So basically, they thought that the Gentiles were free to come to Jesus, but they had to come to him by way of the law of Moses. So we're kind of setting the stage here for what this letter in Galatians is. Turn my page here. So Paul and Barnabas, they've traveled to Jerusalem to discuss these issues with the leadership of the church. And that trip to the Galatians is what we're writing about here in the first part of chapter 2. So let's read chapter 2, verse 1 through 10. Then after 14 years, I went up again to Jerusalem, this time with Barnabas. I took Titus along also. I went in response to a revelation, and meeting privately with those esteemed as leaders, I presented to them the gospel that I preached among the Gentiles. I wanted to be sure I was not running and had not run my race in vain. Yet not even Titus, who was with me, was compelled to be circumcised, even though he was a Greek. This matter arose because some false believers had infiltrated our ranks to spy on the freedom we have in Christ Jesus and to make us slaves. We did not give in to them for a moment so that the truth of the gospel might be preserved for you. As for those who were held in high esteem, whatever they were makes no difference to me. God does not show favoritism. They added nothing to my message. On the contrary, they recognized that I'd been entrusted with the task of preaching the gospel to the uncircumcised, just as Peter had been to the circumcised. For God, who was at work in Peter as an apostle to the circumcised, was also at work in me as an apostle to the Gentiles. James, Cephas, and John, these esteemed as pillars, gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship when they recognized the grace given to me. They agreed that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. All they asked was that we should continue to remember the poor, the very thing I'd been eager to do all along. So Paul knew that the truth of the gospel was worth fighting for. And so the events that Paul recorded here occurred, you have to think about this, this occurred at a very sensitive time in a very young, in very early in the church. The church was still in its infancy, and so it was very vulnerable to these false teachings. And so I think we see, you know, we still face challenges within the church, both as individuals and as a church body. So I want to look at three truths from this passage that can help us to face these challenges. I'm going to cover three truths or three points I want to make, and then I have three questions. But the first truth is, we should seek confirmation of our convictions. We should seek confirmation of our convictions. Let's read 1 through 3 again. Then after 14 years, I went up again to Jerusalem, this time with Barnabas. I took Titus along also. I went in response to a revelation, and meeting privately with these esteemed as elders, I presented to them the gospel that I preached among the Gentiles. I wanted to be sure I was not running and had not been running my race in vain. Yet not even Titus, who was with me, was compelled to be circumcised, even though he was a Greek. So Paul had gone to Jerusalem early in his ministry, as we saw in chapter 1, and And he had gotten to know Peter a little bit, and now 14 years later, he's going back to Jerusalem. This time, he wants to make sure that he's not running in vain. He wanted to make sure that the gospel that he was preaching didn't contain any false teachings. So he meets with the leaders in private to share with them the gospel message that he was wanted to present to them what he was preaching. In Acts 15, Luke describes this event, and he talks about how when Paul and Barnabas got there that they shared what had happened on their first missionary journey. And in Acts 15, it says Paul and Barnabas talked about the miracles and wonders that God had done among the Gentiles. And I believe this is the same event that Paul is describing to us here. See, Paul wanted assurance that he was teaching the right thing. And we also have to be convinced of our beliefs. And we can find that belief or that conviction in several different ways. First of all, when we see evidence of God being glorified in our actions, and then we know that our convictions are right, that we're believing the right thing. When we see that good fruit is being produced, a good tree will bear good fruit. So then we, at those times, we can have belief and conviction knowing that our beliefs are correct. We also have to be humble enough to learn from one another. We have to ask good questions to one another. We have to be prepared to be corrected when we're wrong. If you remember when Priscilla and Aquila, when they ran into Apollos and his teaching was a little bit off, they weren't afraid to pull him aside and they corrected him. They did it in private, but they did it gently. But they corrected his understanding. And here in this book of Galatians, Paul is humbling himself before this church leadership. He's gone to see the leaders, the elders, and the apostles, and he wants to make sure that his gospel message is on point. And we have to be willing to do that as well. You know, I want to say that I absolutely believe that Paul trusted that what he was preaching was the true gospel, but perhaps his question was really more whether everyone of good reputation in Jerusalem, all of these elders and apostles, I think maybe he wanted to make sure that they believed in the same gospel message that he did. Because, again, it's been 14 years since he's been there, and so perhaps he wasn't confident that they agreed with what he was teaching. So the first truth of this passage is don't be afraid to confirm your convictions and your beliefs. We don't let your teaching be in vain because if you're teaching wrong things, if you're teaching half-truths or lies. The second point I want to make is be careful about confronting your critics. Let's read verses 4 and 5 again. This matter arose, so here he's talking about the matter of circumcision. He says, this matter arose because some false believers had infiltrated our ranks to spy on the freedom we have in Christ Jesus and to make us slaves. We did not give in to them for a moment so that the truth of the gospel might be preserved for you. So Paul faces these false, he says these false believers broke into their ranks. Just he calls them spies. Like they brought in this counterfeit holiness and they tried to make them slaves to the law again. And it's not real clear here if he's talking about these false witnesses, whether they're in Jerusalem or whether they're back in Antioch. But we do know that it's clear throughout Paul's writings that he was constantly faced with challenges from men who would confront him on all the various issues of Christianity. And in this case, he's talking about the opposition that they're resisting the freedom that's found in the gospel of salvation by grace. So here we see, though, in verse 5 that Paul didn't stop to debate them or to engage with them in conversation. Instead, we see that Paul, he said he didn't move an inch. Not even for a moment did they give in. Realize that these men did not come to Paul with some sort of a prepared statement and said, we're here to spy on your liberty with Christ and we want to bring y'all back into bondage of the law. You know, what the truth is, I imagine that these men had the best of intentions. But even with the best of intentions, they were still dangerous. And Paul knew that if he gave in to them, that if he even entertained the thoughts of allowing circumcision to be a requirement for salvation, that the truth of the gospel would die. So Paul stood up to his critics so that the truth of the gospel could continue to be spread. He wanted to ensure that the gospel continued to be preached in Galatia in particular, but he wanted to be able to spread that word to all the Gentiles in general. If he had given in to these false teachers, even for a little bit of time, then if he even agreed with some of their teachings, then the Gentiles would have ended up being trapped in the same mosaic rites and rituals that had already failed in the past. And we too, we're going to face our critics. We can't outrun them. We can't outsmart them, at least not all the time. But what we can do is we can learn to handle them. Paul refused to get tangled up with them in dialogue. In fact, in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 20 and 21, he tells Timothy to avoid critics. He says, "Turn away from the godless chatter and opposing ideas of what is falsely called knowledge." You know, sure, there's probably some situations where we're called to engage people who oppose us, but if we stop for a moment to confront these people, then it may prevent us from being able to share the gospel. We've got to avoid the urge to be right all the time, even with those who have false beliefs, and instead we've got to move forward with preaching the truth. I can think of an instance with our food pantry where we had a false believer coming in that was trying to share a false gospel with people. And I felt that I needed to confront him, that I needed to show him the truth, that I needed to try and convince him against his convictions. And that was a horrible mistake to make because he wasn't going to be convinced. And so there's times where we need to make sure how we handle those people, that we're careful about when we confront people, that instead sometimes it's just better to move on and preach the truth to the people that want to hear it. The third point, or the third truth of this passage, is learn to rest in the role that God has assigned to you. Learn to rest in the role that God has assigned to you. Let's read 6 through 10. "As for those who were held in high esteem, whatever they were makes no difference to me. God does not show favoritism. They added nothing to my message. On the contrary, they recognized that I had been entrusted with the task of preaching the gospel to the uncircumcised, just as Peter had been to the circumcised. For God, who was at work in Peter as an apostle to the circumcised, was also at work in me as an apostle to the Gentiles. James, Cephas, and John, those esteemed as pillars, gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship when they recognized the grace given to me. They agreed that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. All they asked was that we should continue to remember the poor, the very thing I'd been eager to do all along." So Paul now goes back to finish talking about this encounter that he had had with the elders and the apostles in verse 3. And Paul wasn't overly impressed with these Christians of high reputation, if you will. Paul knew that God doesn't show favoritism to any man, and so Paul didn't seem to be overly impressed. He says that these men heard the gospel message that he preached, and they didn't add anything to it, meaning that they agreed with what he was teaching. The leaders of the church in Jerusalem approved of Paul's message. Paul points out that James, the brother of Jesus, and the apostles Peter and John, they gave Paul and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship. They shook hands with them, very similar to what we do today, or in other words, they were approving of their ministry. They knew that Paul was not going to require the Gentiles to come under the Mosaic law to find salvation in Christ, and they agreed with him on that. they all understood the role that God had for them as well. And by even though they could be united, even though they clearly had separate roles within the church. Paul's main mission was to the Gentiles, while Peter's focus was with the Jews. Of course, these distinctions were not absolute. If you remember, Peter was the first one to bring salvation to the Gentiles when he baptized Cornelius and his family and his friends, the Cornelius, the Roman centurion. And of course, Paul would take the message first into the synagogues in all the church, in all the cities that he went to. So they both preached to both Jews and Gentiles, but the roles were pretty well clearly defined. The body of Christ, it's this beautiful, living, breathing entity. Each believer, each of us is given gifts for a particular role. Some are given the gift of teaching. Some are given the gift of leadership. Some are given the gift at showing mercy or at serving. The problem that we need to make sure we guard against is elevating one gift above another gift, or even coveting someone else's gift, wishing that God had given us that gift. We have to learn to embrace our roles and become comfortable with them. I know sometimes there's roles that we can see that God has given to us, but it doesn't mean that we're comfortable in that role. You have to feel like that the role God gave you is the right role, though. We can't tell God what's right or what's fair. He does what's right and fair. God is always just. So embrace your gift. Learn to be comfortable in that role that God has given you. Learn to celebrate that role. Thank God for the gift that he's given you and the different gifts that he's given those that are around you. So I told you I had three truths, and that's those, and now I have three questions. And so the first question is, do you invest in others? We see in this passage that Paul took Barnabas and Titus with him when he went up to Jerusalem. These men were being used by God to minister to the Gentiles, but they also ministered to one another. They strengthened one another. They invested in one another. Barnabas invested in Paul when he vouched for him in Jerusalem after his conversion. You know, Barnabas didn't have anything to gain by doing that, but he did it because it was the right thing to do. We see that Barnabas invested in Paul when he went with him on his first missionary journey. We know that Paul invested in Titus. In Titus chapter 1, verse 4, Paul refers to him as his own son after the common faith. See, Titus wasn't just somebody that Paul had converted, but there was a relationship there, a relationship that requires you to invest in someone's life. So do you invest in others? The second question I have is, do you work with others? We see in this passage that Paul and Barnabas and Peter and John and James are all on the same page concerning the truth of the gospel. They extended that right hand of fellowship. It meant they vowed a friendship and a partnership. Though they knew that there were troublemakers within the church, they were going to work together for the sake of the gospel. Now, that didn't mean that they worked side by side. They each had a different calling, but the message was the same. And so they worked together, not in competition. So do you work with others? And then the last question is, do you cause trouble for others? Here in this passage, Paul paints a picture of these spies infiltrating the enemy's camp. These false preachers were not true believers, but those they professed to be devoted to Christ. But what they truly wanted was to bring the church back into bondage to these rituals and rites and regulations of Judaism. Today, there's still false teachers in and around the church. I think Satan would love nothing more than to get these false teachers, these liars, into the church. So we have to make sure that we guard against them. We have to refuse to fall for the evil works that these troublemakers can have in a church. So the three questions were, do you invest in others? Do you work with others? Do you cause trouble for others? So this passage here, this encounter, is one of the most crucial moments in the early history of the church. Here we see that these early church leaders were united in their message of salvation. They all got together. They talked about the gospel. They agreed about the gospel. The gospel is being safeguarded against one of its earliest and one of its biggest threats. It was crucial that the message to the Gentiles was right, that they got it right. And so if they didn't, then their efforts would have been put in vain. The church would have collapsed. I think it would have fallen right back into its legalism and these failed attempts at being justified through the law. And now I would be personally remiss if I didn't talk about verse 10 a little bit more. Thought it was kind of fitting that this was in my lesson, this verse. Because Paul says that the only thing that these church leaders asked him to do was always remember the poor. Something Paul said that he was eager to do. You know, financial compassion for the poor is a very important part of the church and of ministry. The apostles believed that it was so important that they mentioned it here right alongside the purity of the gospel. Paul didn't see giving to the poor as a burden. He saw it as a blessing. If you think about the apostles, they saw that compassion lived out in with Jesus. They had these memories of the way Christ himself lived and how he served. They remembered Jesus' words to the man who invited him to a feast in Luke 14:13. He says, when you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Because they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. So these men heard, they experienced Jesus' compassion to the poor. The point is, the apostles understood that the ministry to the poor flowed out of a heart that was created by the gospel. It was a critical part of their ministry, really a foundational part of the gospel message. And that's why I'm excited that we've made it such a critical commitment here in Leander. As it says in Galatians chapter 6, verse 10, so then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. So yes, take care of our own. But the heart of Christ does not neglect the unbelievers. See, Paul realized on that road to Damascus that he was called. He knew that he had to move, that he had to take action, like Daryl talked about last week. And so we have to listen to that same calling. We have to make sure that we're investing in and working with people and not working against them. We have to make sure that our beliefs and our convictions are true and that they're correct. We have to be careful in how we deal with our critics. And we've got to accept the role that God has for each one of us, that he's given us. And as we do ministry, we need to make sure that we don't ever forget the poor along the way. The lesson is yours tonight. If you have any needs, if you have anything you need to share with us, we're a family here, and we can't help one another. We can't encourage one another if we don't know where the needs are. So if you have any needs, please bring them to us as we stand and sing.